Hey guys, this is your host Tushar from Buzz Behind Sports. Today we have a very special guest with us covering a very special topic, Mr. Rohit Walwalkar, a lawyer turned professional management expert. He has a strong background in law and has a bachelor's degree from Mumbai University. He also has a master's degree from University of Deakin, Melbourne. He has worked with many companies like Swimming Australia, Northeast United FC, and has an ample of experience in many other companies. Today, we invite him on our interesting podcast to talk about sports law, its different verticals associated with it, and some examples. So without wasting any time, let's begin.
Hello, sir. So welcome to our podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you.
So, sir, I read your LinkedIn. So it says you are a lawyer. So how did you think of becoming a lawyer? Like, how did you start? Like, I want to go in the law industry first.
Okay, so thank you for your invitation first. Thank you to IISc as well. So to answer your question, I enrolled for my law course without any knowledge about what is going to happen in the future. I just went with the flow. So I did my 5-year law course after my HSC, that's 12th standard.
Okay.
But obviously I had an inclination towards sport and how the industry or business of sport works, right, when, you know, since I was in law school. And I was inclined towards law, but I was very much inclined towards sports as well. So I was just waiting for my law school to end. As soon as my law school got over, I enrolled myself for my master's in sports, where I studied the business of sport, how the industry works, what are the different areas of sport. And in that process, I thought, why do I need to waste my knowledge in terms of law, where I can actually use, you know, instead I can use the knowledge of law in the sport industry or in the sport business. And that's where I plan to be a sports lawyer, write articles about sports law, the different issues, the legal issues that are happening in different sports. And then eventually that led me to a path where, you know, sports and law could be combined in one go. I understood that it is a very niche field, and if I actually practice in this area of sport, it would help me in the long run. So, better late than never, but both of the fields got me to where I am today.
So, sir, do you think, is there anything like sports law?
Okay, so to be very frank with you, there's nothing called sports law. Now, why I say this on a sports law podcast is that till date, there's no of law called as sports law in India. Sports law is usually made of different laws already prevailing or already existing in India. Now, when I say different laws, that include your Indian contract law, Indian Contract Act, basically, contract laws, labor laws, company laws, intellectual property laws, labor laws. So all of these laws, if you add all of them,
okay,
all of them make one sports law. So like, as I say, you know, as I say in the public sometimes, that there's no such thing called as coffee law.
Yeah,
right? Exactly. So there's no such thing as sports law, but sports law is a combination of all the different laws. So for example, if a player is actually not paid his or her dues as in the salary, yeah, by a club, you know, the player cannot go and file a case under something called as sports law, because that law does not exist.
Yes.
Okay. Now the player, what the player can do is, player can go and file a case under labor law. Okay. Now labor law, also, for example, there is a player who has a contract with a club.
Okay.
Okay. Now, how does the, does the contract come under sports law? Yes, but also a no. Why? Because no. Why no? Because there's no sports law. But the contract definitely comes under the Indian Contract Act.
Okay.
just basically
that's the contract. Yes. So it's an addition of all the laws, a combination of all the laws that are associated with sport, but not a single thing called as sports law.
So sir, मुझे लग रहा है कि law एक बड़ा सा term है जिसके अंदर जो sports आ रहा है as a part. तो sir, as you mentioned कि intellectual property, तो इसमें difference क्या बनता है अगर sports में आप sports की perspective से देखें and in general law perspective से देखें तो?
Okay. So, intellectual property, as I said, is again a part of law. There is an Intellectual Property Act that has been passed by the government of India. So, there is a law called as the Intellectual Property Rights Law, which we say as IPR.
Okay.
Right? So, now under IPR, there is trademarks, there is copyrights, there are patents. Now, all the three are or play a part in sports. Copyrights and trademarks play a major part in sports. Now, why? Because most of the logos, most of the literal meaning, most of the lyrics, most of the literary work, everything plays a huge role in building a team or marketing a team.
Okay.
For example, a Mumbai Indians logo has a huge brand value today in the market.
Mm.
Just with the logo, you understand that, yes, this is Mumbai Indians. Or only with a tick, you understand that it's Nike.
Nike, yeah.
Yes. So in that case, this is where the trademarks comes into picture.
Okay.
Now, if there is any infringement of that specific trademark, if someone else uses that mark with a tick, but it's not Nike, that's where the legal case happens.
Okay.
That is where sports law comes into picture. That is where intellectual property rights law comes into picture. And intellectual property rights law is under the umbrella of sports law.
Okay. So, for an instance, I have a logo.
Yes.
So, like, koi mera logo copy na kare, to what all steps like, do I have to take? Like, just the basic steps if you
okay.
mention it.
So, to start with, a trademark or a mark is a distinctive mark.
Okay.
Now, why I say distinctive, that is because it has a distinctive feature or a special feature.
Okay.
Now, that special feature or the special logo is only with that specific brand. It does not have any resemblance with any other brand in the world.
Hmm.
Like, for example, you have the Nike swoosh.
Yes.
Yes. Nike swoosh, just by the swoosh logo, you see people resemble it with Nike. Or with the three stripes, people resemble it with Adidas, correct? So, to have that resemblance or to have that distinctiveness, the mark needs to be registered with the Indian Trademark Association or the Indian Intellectual Property Organization. Now, once that mark is registered, only then your mark is an official trademark.
Okay.
Okay. Now, in that, you see a TM. Have you seen a TM?
Yeah.
Or have you seen a R?
Yes. Yes. Just a small
R. Subject. Yes. So, that means the registered trademark.
Okay.
Now, if someone tries to copy it, the person who owns that mark has the full right to file a case against the person copying it and has the right to claim compensation or inappropriately using that mark.
Okay.
Also, secondly, so there is something called as uniqueness.
Okay.
So every mark is unique. Every registered mark is unique. So like, for example, Nike swoosh. Again, I take the example of a Nike logo. It is unique as compared to any other brand. So if anyone tries to get a logo, same as a tick, but it is not Nike. Okay. It might create a confusion in the minds of consumers.
Yes.
That whether this is Nike or whether this is not.
Mm.
And that is when the organization that looks after the providing a mark to the brand, that specific brand, either approves it or disapproves it.
Yes.
Most of the time, because to avoid confusion, it disapproves it.
Okay.
But if there is no resemblance with Nike in this case, then probably it might approve it.
Okay. So before that, before what you said, we were talking about sports.
Sure.
Sir, so in sports, sir, there are so many topics like discrimination, anti-doping, violence. So could you just brief me about these points?
Okay, so let me take one point at a time.
Okay.
I'll start with violence. What do you mean by violence in sport? Okay, so now violence is basically something that an intentional act that is carried out by one person on another. Now that intention can be, or should be rather, without the consent.
Okay.
Now, if there is consent, obviously it would not be considered as violence. And what do you mean by violence? Violence is basically, causing harm to someone, correct?
Okay.
Now, if you are causing harm to someone, that person might get hurt, as obvious. Now, if that person is getting hurt, there are two types of hurt that a person may be caused.
Okay.
It can either be an actual bodily harm, or it can be a grievous bodily harm.
Okay.
Now, what do you mean by actual bodily harm? Is you have just got a bruise in your hand, got a cut in your leg,
okay.
You know, but that is not stopping you from carrying out your day-to-day life.
Okay.
However, grievous bodily harm is something that, you know, it is dangerous to your life. It can claim your life as well.
Okay.
You can die. It can go all up to manslaughter.
So, sir, is there any example in these
recent? So, yes, there is an example. So, in very recently, there was a fight between Khabib and Conor McGregor.
Oh, yeah.
So, in that, there was a bout that was happening between the two.
Okay.
And if you see, during the bout, there is a consent from both the parties.
Okay.
So, if they are hitting each other, that does not constitute violence.
So, it'll be inside the ring.
When it's inside the ring, when the bout is happening, there is consent to hit one another.
Yeah.
So, it does not constitute violence.
Okay.
However, once the bout gets over, once the referee says that the match is over or the bout is over, after that, if you go on and hit the opponent or anyone in the crowd, that would constitute violence. Now, what happened in the Khabib versus McGregor case is, after the bout got over, Khabib actually went and hit a family member or a friend of Conor McGregor who was sitting in the crowd. I'm not sure if there was any religious comment that was passed or what actually made Khabib furious. But the fact that he went out of the ring after the bout was over and hit the opponent's friend or family member, that definitely constitutes violence. Now, violence, the person might have got hurt, whether the injury was grievous or it was mild, that does not matter.
Okay.
But the fact, again, as I say, happened after the bout was over, that constitutes violence.
So then, what was the after effect of that example which you gave? Is there anything like the person got banned or he was fined or suspended?
I believe there was a fine that was attached to it. But the different sanctions which are levied,
okay,
or which are available for the with the authority, when there is a violence that has been proved, they can be from fine, it can be a ban, it can be a suspension, it can be even a prison.
Oh.
Why? Because anyone can die. And if they if a person dies, then the opposite person can be charged for murder.
Okay.
So there can be life imprisonment, there can be sentencing for a specific period, apart from just suspensions, bans and fines.
So then, agar galti se ye hua hai incident, to then uska fir kya case rahega?
So in this, there has to be a circumstantial evidence.
Okay.
The evidence needs to be proved that yes, this is the fact that constituted violence. There needs to be an intention. That intention needs to be proved that harm was caused.
Okay.
The intention to harm someone was there, was present.
Okay.
Once that intention is proved, it was an intentional idea to harm someone. Or if the person actually went out and against the rules of the sport, then it constitutes violence.
Okay. So, I recently heard there was one case in tennis. So, Djokovic was angry. He was furious and by mistake, he hit the line judge. So, after that, he was fined and all. But wouldn't it be like ki galti se usne mara hai? Because he was angry. He was just hitting the ball everywhere.
Okay. So, I believe in this case, Djokovic, this is my personal opinion.
Okay.
I believe Djokovic would have faced a fine for this.
Huh.
Now, why is that so? Because the referee is the final person who decides the match, the how the game is going to be.
Yes.
And if the referee has decided to foul Djokovic or say that, you know, this is not the right point. And after that, if Djokovic tries to overpower the referee, irrespective of the fact that he is world number one or he is one of the most influential sports person in the industry or in the world, that does not mean that he crosses his line. And I'm sure there would be some fine which would have been levied on Djokovic for that specific misconduct.
Okay. So, in violence also, so I've heard of a case where some people are allowed to play and some people are not allowed to play. So, with what kind of mini statement or what kind of topic will this come under? Like, for example, if I'm an athlete and there's one more athlete with me who's not from India, for example. So, I'm like the agency or the federation is allowing me to play and is just saying ki you're not allowed to play because you're not from India.
Okay. So I think that comes under discrimination.
Okay.
So there that comes under the topic of discrimination in sport. Okay. Now, discrimination again can be n number of discriminations. Now, discrimination can just not be restricted to discrimination due to your race, but it can be discrimination due to religion, caste, gender, nationality, equal pay, as they say. Now, in this case, the example which you gave that you were allowed because you are from India and the other person was not allowed because that person prevailed from a different nation.
Exactly.
Now, again, this can be discrimination due to nationality.
Yes.
So, in this, again, there has to be a very, very strong point that needs to be proved by the competing authority or the organizers that, you know, why this specific person is not allowed. Is there a precedent to it?
Okay.
Has there any instance in the past where a similar issue has occurred where again that player has not been allowed to participate in a tournament?
Okay.
But if there is no precedence or if there is no concrete reason why this player has not been allowed, and if it is very much clear in the media or a clear fact that this defines discrimination, then you know, that gives you the answer. So I would like to highlight one example in tennis. So I was reading about the 2003 Indiana Wells Open, where the Williams sisters, Venus Williams and Serena Williams, were participating in the Indiana Wells Open. And Venus Williams was asked to forfeit the match for no reason whatsoever. Later, Serena Williams was also asked to forfeit the match.
Yes.
And what had happened is the crowd started booing them. Now, when they started booing them, it was their home crowd, considering they hail from the United States of America. And this was a clear case of racial discrimination, considering they are black in color. And the effect of that incident was, today we are living in 2023. So that's 20 years from that incident. Neither of the sisters, Venus nor Serena, have ever gone back to participate in that specific tournament, that is the Indiana Wells,
yes,
since 2003. So that was a huge statement in terms of not to have discrimination on the basis of color.
Okay.
Apart from that, you must have seen in the Premier League very recently, there are players, most of the players are taking a knee.
Okay.
With regards to not having discrimination on the basis of color. So, not just in football, but many other sports, there are athletes who are taking a knee to have a clear idea as to stop racism.
Yes.
The idea of stop racism has been in the news very wide open.
Okay. So, in discrimination also, in many sports, like what does the government, or as you said, in William's sister's case, so what happened to the crowd then? Were they fined or were they not allowed to attend any other matches in Indiana Wells?
I believe the crowd, now the laws have become very stringent, very strict. Now, if you are actually caught discriminating someone on the basis of their race, religion, caste, color, the authorities who are present at the venue directly take you off and make sure that you are in a blacklist.
Okay.
And you are not allowed to attend any of the tennis matches at the venue in your lifetime.
Okay.
So that's a very good way of not letting people discriminate when the players are actually playing an event or a tournament or a game.
So, with regards to that, I've seen many athletes take performance-enhancing drugs. So, what do you think about that? And is it actually allowed in law, or it's just like one guy is performing better than others because he has done this practice and he's taking the drugs, but will still be considered?
To answer your question, it's a very interesting topic to, you know, have a discussion about. But my first statement to this is that, you know, it is not always necessary to have performance enhancing drugs. Most of the performance enhancing drugs may be legal, but there are some which are definitely illegal. Now, what do athletes do is for going for glory? When I say going for glory, that means Olympics is an event which comes just once in 4 years. Now, these athletes train day in and day out. Now, to get a medal at the Olympics is a very big deal.
Yes.
And some people or some athletes go out of their way to take certain drugs, certain performance-enhancing drugs to up their performance and probably get a medal in a different manner.
So sorry to interrupt you, but
yes.
Does Olympic committee has that a list? I think they give a list ki you don't have to take these kind of drugs I think a certain period before the Olympics.
So the World Anti-Doping Agency,
okay,
along with the International Olympic Committee,
mm-hmm,
that is the IOC, issues a list of substances that are valid for a certain sport. So the performance, basically what I mean is performance enhancing drugs can be legal for one sport, but those same specific drugs, the performance enhancing drugs, can be illegal for another sport. On the basis of sport to sport, it varies.
Okay.
So now what does the IOC or the World Anti-Doping Agency do, they come out with a list of substances that are okay with or an athlete can consume 14 days, that's 2 weeks prior to the Olympics or the mega event or the world championship begins, or any event, any sporting event. Now, if you consume that specific drug before, and if that drug is illegal or remains illegal, obviously you would be caught under doping.
Okay. So, but it has stated that you have to stop this 14 days prior to the event. So, if the person is taking the performance enhancing drugs before, so will it still count in that, and will the person still be held responsible for that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
So, you can't take. And also, sir, one more question for you, sorry.
However, I'll just add something to this, you know, since we are talking about doping or performance enhancing drugs, I think the biggest line that needs to be highlighted over here is, you know, it gives an undue advantage for someone over the others.
Okay.
Now, it is not correct to have an undue advantage over the others.
Okay.
Why? Because you have, everyone is working hard for that one moment, probably at the Olympic Games. Everyone has worked for 4 years, day in and day out.
Yes.
A performance enhancing drug gives you that undue advantage over the others. And secondly, it has side effects, health side effects. It can harm your body in different ways. You know, it can cause high blood pressure, can give you probably a heart attack as well. So all of these small but very important reasons can suffice my cause or reason to say that, you know, taking performance enhancing drugs or promoting doping is not a good idea.
So, jo list nikalti hai sir by anti-doping agency. So, is it the same for every sport or it differs for each and every sport?
So, it differs from sport to sport. Okay. Also, it differs from gender to gender as well.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So, could you give me an example of any such case of anti-doping which has been caught recently or in the past?
So, there are many athletes who have been caught under anti-doping.
Okay.
Also, who have confessed that, yes, we have taken performance enhancing drugs or we have been doping for a while in terms of performing better in our respective sport. Now, very recently, 7-time world champion Lance Armstrong.
Yes.
He confessed that, yes, he was taking performance enhancing drugs to better his performance. So that is a direct confession. So there is no case over here. But there are other cases, like for example, Maria Sharapova in 2008 Australian Open. She was guilty of doping. Shoaib Akhtar in 2006 was guilty of doping again.
Okay.
In 2003 World Cup, the Cricket World Cup that happened in South Africa, Shane Warne was asked to go back to Australia right after landing at the Johannesburg airport.
Okay.
Because he was caught under doping. So there was a doping test that was conducted at the airport where his results were positive.
Okay.
So he was not asked to even travel with the team to the team hotel in Johannesburg or in South Africa, but he was asked to directly go back to Australia. There are many other cases with regards to anti-doping.
For example, how does the anti-doping agency knows ki this person or a certain person is on these drugs?
Okay, so the anti-doping agency, that is the World Anti-Doping Agency, if it is a world event, or if it is a domestic event or a national event, then it's the National Anti-Doping Agency, which we profoundly call as NADA.
Okay.
Or in World Anti-Doping Agency, we call it as WADA.
WADA.
So, these are the authorities who are present at these sporting events. And it is a random check on the athletes where the athlete, after completing his or her race, are asked to come to a separate area where their doping test is conducted. Now, their doping test is conducted in one of the three ways. There are three ways how you can understand whether a person has taken any drugs or no. It is either through your urine. So there's a urine test, there is a blood test, and there is a hair test as well.
Okay.
So you can actually test whether an athlete has taken performance enhancing drugs, banned performance enhancing drugs, by having an examination of your hair.
Okay.
So if proven guilty, then obviously you face the consequences of the same.
Like ban.
So there can be a life ban. There can be a suspension. There can be a huge fine. The federation, if for example the athlete is representing a country, then the WADA or the IOC can actually charge the federation, the national federation as well, for not taking care of the athletes or not having or knowledge basically of the athletes taking banned performance enhancing drugs. Also, there is a bad reputation. Diminishes the image of the country as well. If you read something about it in the media, you do not feel proud about it.
Yes.
So, yeah, that.
So, what we mean? For an example, in football, so a player is associated with a club and has a contract for instance, 2-3 years, and he has found guilty of anti-doping. So, uska matlab contract ko kya hoga? Like, will it be terminated instantly, or what will happen?
So, the contract would not be terminated. The player would be suspended for a certain period of time.
Okay.
Now, when I say suspended, suspension is for a temporary basis.
Okay.
Termination is for a permanent basis.
Yes.
So, till the time the case has been solved, there is proper evidence to that case. There is a proper verdict to that case. The player stands suspended.
Okay.
Once the player is proven guilty, is when the player's contract will be officially terminated.
Okay.
So, the suspension will get over and the termination will be in place.
So, example, I've given a contract. So, I have an agent with me, and after signing the contract, I've been found guilty of doping. So, will the agent also be held responsible with me, or will I be the only one which is held responsible?
The agent would be held responsible as well.
Okay.
Why? Because agent looks after the athlete.
Hmm.
Now, when I say this, the agent would obviously not face criminal sanctions to it, but definitely would face a fine or a suspension.
Okay.
However, the athlete would definitely face a criminal sanction for taking the banned substances.
So, if I don't know what I'm eating, like I have a nutritionist with me, and she's just telling me what are things I have to eat, and I'm just having them without much knowledge in them. So, will it be my fault ki I'm having these types of drugs without knowing? So, like, will I still be guilty of that thing? Ki, I don't know ki I'm having the enhancing drugs, and later they find out ki I have consume these types of drugs.
Okay, so as a professional athlete, you always have to be on your toes. That's the basic of being a professional athlete. Now, when I say they have to be on their toes, that means that they always have to be updated as to what they are eating, whether they are eating is right, whether they are eating, what they are eating or what they are consuming. For example, a protein powder. Is that legal or is that banned by the association?
Okay.
Is that harming their body? So, n number of questions. Now, how do they come to know that? One is obviously through the doctor, whether they are harming the body. So, consulting a doctor. And number two, checking regularly the website of the World Anti-Doping Agency as well as the National Anti-Doping Agency, whether the the ingredients which you are consuming, are they valid or do they come under the banned substances?
Okay.
If they are coming under the banned substances, obviously you have to stop.
That's true. So, agar, I'm in a competition or something, and my rival or opponent just puts the performance enhancing drugs, like if I'm consuming by mistake because opponent put that drug on my food list or something. So, will I still be held responsible for that, or I can just tell the lawyer ki I don't know what I'm having because in my list there was nothing which was stated that it was performance enhancing drug.
So, as they say, the law is blind. So, law always wants circumstantial evidence.
Okay.
Even if you are innocent, but if there is no circumstantial evidence to the fact that there was any mixing of any banned substance by your competitor, then you would be charged guilty because there was no evidence to it.
Okay.
There was no attached proof to what your statement is.
Mm-hmm.
If you can prove that, yes, there is a CCTV camera where you can capture your competitor mixing something in your bottle, you are safe.
Okay. So, right now, we have some questions from our viewers. So, I would like you to address these questions. So, this question is actually very interesting. So, why are players, agent important in negotiating contract and navigating legal matters for athlete?
Okay. So, player agents are someone who basically look after the athlete's well-being. When I say well-being, it's on the field as well as off the field. When I say on the field, that means negotiating the player's salary, looking after the player's wages, looking after the player's insurance, looking after the player's taxes, making sure the player is paid salaries on time, making sure the player has a good accommodation to stay, proper food to eat, XYZ reasons. Making sure the player is in a good space.
Okay.
This is what I mean. And off the field, making sure the player is getting enough sponsorships, getting enough brand endorsements, making sure there is no media outburst about the player, making sure that the player is financially very happy.
Okay.
As much as he's content on the field, he's content off the field as well. He's having a good life outside the football pitch or any sporting arena. So in this case, I think the agent definitely plays a huge role in making sure that the player is in a good space. Apart from that, why a player needs an agent is, as you may know, in professional sport, the player is so much sport-centric that player does not, most of the times, does not know what are the other things that take place apart from just playing. So there are different terms like, you know, knowing about what the duties of the player are, what are the bonuses, what are the different taxes that need to be paid, what are the different investments where the player can invest.
Okay.
So these are the options which an agent gets to a player. So a player-agent relationship is something of a brother, elder brother, younger brother relationship, where the elder brother always advises the younger brother how to manage your life.
Okay.
Not just play, but also study, if we can take it that way.
Then, is it possible for a player to grow without an agent, or if we have some trust issues or something like that?
It is possible. It is not mandatory for a player to have an agent.
Okay.
It is not a rule that is written in any book that an agent should be there for a player.
Okay.
But for comfort basis, or for a player to be safe, be happy, be content off the field, as well as on the field, or negotiate on behalf of the player, okay, an agent is necessary. A player may be very good at playing, but may not have a good business sense.
Yes.
In that case is where the agent actually comes into picture.
Okay. So, what are the different clauses in the contract?
Okay. So, a player, professional player contract has n number of clauses. It can vary from, you know, 15 to 20 different types of clauses. But the important clauses which a player contract has and which a player, you know, needs to know or be aware of, or the agent needs to know, be aware of and inform the player, is obviously number one is the term. I mean, when I say term, that means the start date, the duration of the contract. After that, there is something called as the extension clause. If the player or the club wants to extend the contract after that term is over, so there has to be an extension clause to that contract. So there is extension. There is something called as a loan clause.
Okay.
There is something called as the club's the obligations, the rights, responsibilities, obligations of a player towards the club. As well as the rights, responsibilities, duties of the club towards the player. So it has to be reciprocal. It can't be one way. Apart from that, there has to be salary. There has to be bonuses. There has to be facilities that are provided by the club. There has to be something called as taxes, something called as insurance. There has to be something called as injury and illness. There is something called as sponsorships, promotions. There is something called as this cut and many other things.
So there's one last question for you, sir. So fans' behavior sometimes crosses legal boundaries, from being very aggressive on field. Sometimes they cause injury to other fans, or sometimes they injure the players by mistake or in an action to meet the players or whatsoever. So, is there a particular law, or how can the organization handle this type of case?
So, there is no particular law to it, as I may say, but different sporting bodies or different sporting organizations do come up with a specific fine. For example, I had gone for a Boxing Day test match. Okay. Now, there was a sign, clear sign, that anyone who invades the pitch. So, there was a fine or penalty of $2,000. Now, seeing that fine, obviously, most of the people would not want to just barge on the pitch and just give out money.
Yes.
So, in this case, what happens is, usually the associations, the cricket associations or the organizations, come up with a rule or an order that if anyone crosses the line, you have to pay a certain fine. If that's not the end, there can be a prison, there can be a suspension from attending any of the matches at the venue.
Okay.
So there can be n number of things which an organization can levy on a fan.
So it's basically the same, mostly the same for players and the spectators.
Yes, it is. So now, for example, if we go back in time, you know, in India as well, I think in the 1996 Cricket World Cup, if I was not wrong, I was 3 years old, but still I remember that incident. So we, India was playing against Sri Lanka, and that is when the crowd actually got into the stands, onto the ground, onto the pitch. And it was a huge ruckus. Why? Because India had lost that match. Now, that is the reason why we have those barricades now, or the grills that have been installed, so that people don't actually climb that and go to the ground. So that is one law that, or rule that has been implemented by the BCCI to avoid any fans from coming onto the pitch and invading the pitch.
Okay.
So that's a rule. So just like that, other rules also can be implemented. Just what I said before.
Okay. So sir, today we have a special segment for this episode. So our segment is rapid fire. So okay. I'll be giving you questions, and you can choose. There'll be two options, so you can choose either one of them.
Okay.
Who would you bring back from retirement in international cricket? MS Dhoni or Sachin Tendulkar?
Sachin Tendulkar.
Who do you have a practice session with, PV Sindhu or Saina Nehwal?
PV Sindhu.
Which match would you choose in tennis? Federer versus Nadal or Serena versus Venus?
Federer versus Nadal.
Okay. Imagine going back in time and relive one match in stadium. 2011 World Cup Finals or 1983 World Cup Finals cricket?
2011 Cricket World Cup Finals.
Okay. So, what would you rather choose? Chelsea win the Premier League or Champions League?
Chelsea winning the Champions League.
Who do you like to play with? Nadal or Serena Williams?
Nadal.
Who do you rather like to face? Being Shoaib Akhtar or Joel Cardinal?
Shoaib Akhtar.
What would you rather choose? Ferrari winning the Constructors or Hamilton winning another championship?
Ferrari winning the Constructors.
So it was an amazing rapid fire round, and I really love talking about law and of course the rapid fire questions, and it was very exciting
for me
also. So thank you for being a part of this podcast, and we hope to see you again. Guys, please feel free to drop in your questions in the comment box, and we'll make sure to discuss these questions in the next podcast. Thank you for joining us on a podcast with Mr. Rohit, sir. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.